Plus 49.
Welcome to Plus 49, the podcast where we dive into the life stories and experiences of expats navigating their journeys here in Germany. I am your host, Sigrid Arteaga, and today we're kicking off the year with inspiration and connection. So whether you're new to Germany or a seasoned Berliner, this is your space to explore cultural bridges, personal transformations, and everything in between. We have an exciting show for you today featuring an insightful conversation with Fernanda Suarez. She is an entrepreneur who has built her dream business, Uvas, while embracing life in a small town near Hamburg. So stick with us. It's going to be a great ride. Let's start this year on a positive note by sharing some feel-good stories from Berlin and beyond. These highlights remind us of the incredible things happening in our community. In Fürstenwalde, oder Spree, children and teenagers have built ramps from Lego bricks to make local shops more accessible for wheelchair users, strollers, and walkers. This creative initiative shows how small actions can have a big impact on inclusivity. Despite financial challenges, Berlin's cultural scene continues to thrive. This March, a new comedy stage will open at the theater am Potsdamer Platz, with the beloved comedian Michael Mittenmeier leading the charge. On the transportation fronts, there are actually good news, because the Berlin Zoo station is once again a long-distance hub after 18 years, and there's now a direct train connection between Berlin and Paris. So, if you're daydreaming of a quick getaway to the City of Light, it's just an 8-hour ICE right away. In the animal kingdom, Berlin's zoo welcomed panda twins, Lenny and Lotti, who have become star attraction. Meanwhile, the Tierpark sent 4 Przewalski horses to their natural habitat in Kazakhstan as part of a rewilding project. In Brandenburg, the Ostsee in Cottbus has reached its planned water level, transforming a former mining site into the region's largest artificial lake. It's a milestone for sustainability and the future of renewable energies, as the lake will support 40% of the city's heating needs through a giant water-based heat pump. And let's not forget our youngest trailblazer. 7-year-old Berlin native Jana Pitak has crowned world champion in inflatable boat racing, a unique and inspiring achievement. The stories remind us of the resilience, creativity, and compassion that define our community. Let's carry this positive energy into the year ahead. After 13 years in Germany, having a German ex and believing I have seen it all in Germany, I was introduced this year to a new thing. The annual New Year's Eve ritual of watching Dinner for One. If you're new to Germany, you might be scratching your head wondering why this black and white English language sketch has become a beloved staple of Sylvester celebration. So let's uncover the story behind this. Dinner for One is a short comedy sketch just under 18 minutes long, starring British actors Freddie Frinton and Mae Warden. It was recorded in 1963 for German television, but has roots in a British stage routine. Oddly enough, it's virtually unknown in the UK, but has become a cult classic here in Germany. The plot is just absurd. It centers around Miss Sophie, an elderly woman celebrating her 19th birthday. Her butler, James, is tasked with serving an elaborated dinner for Miss Sophie's long-departed friends. Since none of the guests are alive, James plays all of these roles, complete with toasts that involve heavy drinking. As the evening progresses, James becomes drunk, navigating an increasingly chaotic dinner service. The famous line, "the same procedure as every year, James," captures the essence of the sketch, and perhaps why it resonates so deeply. It is a tradition within a tradition, a comforting ritual repeated year after year. But why has this quirky British sketch become so entrenched in German culture? Well, one theory is that it embodies a quintessential European sense of humor, mixing slapstick comedy with dry wit, very dry wit. Another explanation lies in the timing. When it first aired, Dinner for One filled a gap in New Year's programming and quickly gained popularity. Today, it's broadcast on multiple German TV channels every December the 31st, sometimes more than a dozen times throughout the day. Families gather, glasses of sekt in hand, to laugh at the same jokes they have heard countless times before. For many Germans, Dinner for One is more than entertaining. It's a symbol of continuity, nostalgia, and shared joy. And for newcomers and not so newcomers as myself, it's a fun and lighthearted way to immerse yourself in a cultural quirk that reflects Germany's surprisingly affection for British humor. So if you have missed it this year, put it on your list for next Silvester. Trust me, it will be the same procedure as every year, and it's worth it. Our first interview of the year, it's with Dier Fernanda Suarez. She is from UAS de Mexico. It's an amazing project, and not only that, she's also a very amazing woman being here in a small town in Germany, marrying a German guy, and I don't think you ever imagined your life being like this.
Not really. Like, Germany was, to be honest, not in the picture for a while, and then it just happened. Life happened, as many other people that I know, many expats, many Latin expats as well. And yeah, it just happened that we end up in this beautiful country that is Germany.
How is life in a small town compared to Mexico?
That's a crazy, crazy difference, because I'm from Mexico City. We are 20 million people there, and traffic is crazy. Just like, it's vibrant. I don't know. Many people can't stand it and others love it. So it was the first cultural shock I had, because when I first came here, I was not living. I live in Lüneburg. I was living in a village, in the village of my husband. So that was pretty much like cows around me, and I was really not used to that. Yeah, that was just like kind of to adapt. Then we moved to this city. Lüneburg is actually a city on paper, and to me, it is a town. It's nice. Many tourists come here. It's super pretty, like, no doubt. But yeah, it gets small through the years. Like, I've been in Germany for 6 years now, actually. And yeah, you visit all the restaurants around already.
Are there still things after 6 years that you say, oh, okay, I didn't know that?
Yes, every time. I think one of the questions being asked the most when I'm back in Mexico for visiting is, do you already adapt it? And I can say that this is a constant process. Like, it's not like one day you say, okay, today is the day I am completely adapted to the culture of Germany. Like, it's a constant process. Like, the culture evolves with you as well. Germany evolves as well. So you need to also pivot the way you think. And it's a constant process in my view. So I still find things that I say, why? Why would you do that? Why are people like this? I don't know, processes. And yeah, I think to me, Germany is a country that fights itself many times. I find that very crazy to hear from friends, from family members, that they often criticize themselves hardly. Like, we're not there. We shouldn't be called first world country. Like, we're not Scandinavia. We're not digital. And me coming from Mexico, and I see like the big gap in many areas, is like, what you mean? Like, it's a great life. It's a great life quality. You know, it's in many ways, no? Not in every way, maybe, but in many ways. And that's, for example, something I still find surprising of some people I meet.
Very interesting facts, indeed, what you say. It's evolving and you have to evolve with them. It's not like something that just happens. Maybe it has to do with the idea of us coming from a Latin American country where everything is a little bit more open and we're very frank about who we are and how loud we are. And in Germany, it's kind of like you still need to understand what they're going through.
Totally. Yes, I think so. In my personal case, I had this stereotype of closed-minded people, maybe, or like a bit, they don't open emotionally so easily. And I arrived to a very nice circle of people, actually, that I think I was lucky because they were pretty welcoming, very open, like very emotional as well, which was surprising to me. And I really could match that energy, like with my Latin soul. I was like, yeah, that's a nice circle of family and friends. So I think I was lucky. It's not always like that. And I think people tend to generalize as well, Germany. And I do see differences depending on the region, depending on age also. I don't know. But
there's hope out there for everybody. And they're still very open and emotional Germans.
Yeah.
There's hope. Fernanda has a company called Uvas de México. Fernanda, tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, I love it. Uvas de México is a company that I founded 3 years ago, and we take care of importing Mexican wine into Germany and distributing it into other countries of Europe. So we select every label that we bring, and we distribute it in restaurants. We have an online shop. Also, we do events and wine tastings. And I guess the main objective of Uvas de México is to empower these winemakers in Mexico that are a medium size, small size, even many people, or almost everybody in Europe doesn't know that Mexico makes wine and that wine is good there. They only know tequila, they only know mezcal nowadays, and Mexican gastronomy, of course. So it was a gap that I found in Europe. And also, I was living previously in Australia, and I started my research there because Australia is a big producer and consumer of wine, and they also didn't know about Mexican wine. So coming here, it continued, and I just decided to start. It was a long journey, and we started to sell and with the online shop 1 year ago. So it took 2 years to actually bring the product and start with all the paperwork because nobody had done it before. We were the first ones. So in Mexico, they didn't know how to get it out, and in Europe, they didn't know what it was. So it took a time.
Importing wine to a wine country was probably not very easy.
Yes. Germany is like a big producer as well. Like people love their German wines, and in general, the old world, no, Europe, France, Spain, like big producers, big consumers as well. But surprisingly, Germany is the number one or number two importer worldwide of wine. So that was pretty encouraging. And what was encouraging as well is that the wineries were very willing to support with that. And they were very willing to do the marketing, to help us with exporting and importing. And we are working hand by hand with every producer. And we know all of them. And it's like a team effort, what we have achieved. But that's the main process of Uvas, yes.
So you decided 6 years ago, or life decided for you, to come to Germany. How did you meet your boyfriend and now husband?
We met in Australia. We were studying there. I was doing an exchange program during my bachelor. I was there for 6 months and he was doing his master's. And we met in the first week that I arrived, actually. And we've been together since, I don't know how else to put it. But he followed me to Mexico. I followed him back to Germany, back to Australia. Then we went back to Mexico for 3 months. And then we decided to come to Europe in first instance. We decided to come to Europe because I didn't have any approach to German language. But life put us in Germany, both of us. Like, it was easier to find a job here with some background knowledge of the country as well. So yeah, for both of us was the path to follow. And now we have a company. So now Germany is a place here.
Do Germans know how to flirt?
Good question. No. I think no. I don't know German girls, maybe, but German guys, in my experience, they are so straightforward. They have no filters sometimes, and flirting, that's the whole art of it. Like, just showing a little bit of it, like, not all. So I don't know if they are mysterious enough.
What was one of the biggest cultural shocks when you started dating your husband?
That he wanted to split the bill. That was, coming from Mexico, that was like a red flag. That was like, no, that cannot happen. But then obviously I start understanding the culture, and it was like, okay, that was normal for him. It was not an insult. But yeah, I think that was the first thing. I was like, what?
I think you're not the only one with the whole splitting bills. I think a lot of people are very aware of this. And did he talk with you? Because what I've been hearing is that they don't even talk to you. They just stare.
No, he did talk to me. He talked to me. I think it was a very lucky day for him and for me, because we were living in a student accommodation. So you can imagine how this is, like, party every day, and like one apartment is loud, then the other one, then there is like fighting somewhere. Like, and when I arrived to his apartment, like, another German friend invited me like to have a drink with them. And then I arrived there and everybody was playing beer pong, only wearing boxers, like animals, screaming and drinking beer and like speaking German. And German to me sounded very aggressive before. And I was like, what is this apartment? Like, I don't want to be here. And then Timo, my husband, was sitting there like with a golf pants and polo, because he was just arriving from somewhere, and drinking wine from a glass, a proper glass, not like a red cup. So I was like, who's that guy? And so, like, this was a lucky day, because he completely seemed different to the rest of them. And then he was part of the whole gang. But in general, this was like when we met. And then obviously we had a conversation about wine, which was like, yeah, nice for both of us.
Your passion united you.
Exactly. And yeah, but they stare a lot. I agree. In general, like, not only like boys like flirting or stuff, as people in the train and everywhere. I don't understand that yet.
We have had a couple of Ask a Germans regarding this, and they called it the German stare. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's part of the culture. It's part of what we do in this podcast. We talk about, yeah, everything that has to do with Germany and how we have integrated or have found a way to integrate ourselves into this beautiful country. Fernanda, I wanted to ask you about, how has it been for you to start a company here in Germany?
Well, there are many aspects of it. The first one is, I think, losing the fear to do it, doing the first step. It's the hardest part, I would say. And the rest is just a lot of paperwork, especially in Germany. And I think for me, the hardest part was the language as well. It is still, because being an entrepreneur forces you to get yourself out there. And as I said, we do events as well. So obviously I don't only cater a Latin market. I also am focusing in the German market. So language has definitely been a barrier. And I've been overcoming that in the past years. So that was, I think, the first thing. And then the second thing, of course, is all the paperwork that exists in Germany. However, I suppose, as many people think, it was not so hard. It was like following the steps, because what I like, the first thing, the difference I find between Latin America, specifically Mexico, where I'm from, and Germany, is this, that although it's a long process and it's very tedious and slow and annoying, with nothing digital in Germany, it is kind of reliable. So like, it's gonna happen. So if you follow like all the processes that they ask you for, you might achieve something. And in Mexico, even if you do that, maybe somebody at the end is like, I'm not coming to work today. Sorry, like, see you next month. Or like, yeah, you need to give me some money so I can put your papers in the next file. You know, like, it's harder in different ways.
Ahorita, I will help you.
Yes.
Ahorita means limitless.
Indefinitely, yeah. Amount of time.
I don't even know how to translate it. It doesn't have a time.
Yeah, like at some point. Yes.
Some point. Fernanda, where can we find your produce?
Yes, uvasdemexico.de. So like you can just write it like uvas means grapes of Mexico. And it's U-V-A-S de Mexico. So very easy. And you can find us online. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook. And yeah.
What's your favorite wine? What will be your recommendation?
I think you can start with the wines. I don't want to create polemic in my producers, but I think you can start with the wines of Pozo de Luna, they are called. They are a medium-sized winery in San Luis Potosí, which is a state in the right center part of Mexico, 4 hours from Mexico City to the north. And many people, not even in Mexico, know that San Luis Potosí, the state, produces wine. It's a very, very small industry in this state, but they are amazing. They are just great. Like the amazing thing of this is the weather and the difference, because many people say, what's special about Mexican wine? First of all, the weather and the soil is different to Europe. So in San Luis Potosí, you have 1,500 meters above sea level, which many people ski in that height here, or star skiing. And it's special because at night you can reach up to 5 degrees, and during daytime 30 degrees. So this makes the grapes to grow different as well, and give you more concentrated juice, etc. So I would recommend Pozo.
You're very passionate about your job.
Yes, I am. I am actually, yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for being with us today. And everybody outside, take a look at uvasdemexico.de.
Thank you for having me.
Laws 49. Ask a German.
Hi, my name is Fernanda Suarez. I am from Uvas de Mexico, and I've been in Germany for 6 years now, but I still don't understand why many people in Germany eat Milchreis as a main dish. To me, coming from Mexico, that's a dessert, and it doesn't really fill you up, and there's no meat or falafel in the vegan place. Like, it's dessert, so I don't understand that yet.
Milchreis is essentially a creamy rice pudding made from short grain rice, milk, sugar, and a pinch of salt. This makes it not only a budget-friendly meal, but also quite straightforward in preparation. While it does require some time to cook, primarily due to the need for constant stirring to achieve the desired creamy consistency, it remains uncomplicated and accessible for cooks of all skill levels. Milchreis is often enhanced with various toppings and flavorings, allowing for personalization. Common additions include cinnamon and sugar, fruit composts, fresh fruits like strawberries or apples, or even chocolate sauce. And even though all these components make it sound more like a dessert, it is a very versatile meal that can be enjoyed at any time of the day, whether for a hearty breakfast, a satisfying lunch, or even a comforting dinner. For example, the Mensa or Cantina at my uni serves Milchreis with Kirschgrütze every other week. And that's not the only dessert-like meal Germans enjoy. For example, there are also Grießbrei, which is semolina pudding, or Kaiserschmarrn, which is essentially shredded pancakes, and many more. The reason why all these seemingly sweet meals work as actual main dishes lies in their nutritional values. For instance, while Milchreis may seem like a simple dessert at first glance, it provides carbohydrates from the rice and protein from the milk. When paired with fruits or nuts, it can offer additional vitamins and healthy fats, making it a more balanced meal option than one might initially assume. Culturally, the acceptance of sweet dishes as main meals reflects a broader culinary tradition in Germany that values comfort food and simplicity. Many German families have grown up enjoying these dishes as part of their daily diet, creating an emotional connection that transcends their classification as desserts. The idea of having something sweet for dinner is not seen as unusual. Rather, it's embraced as part of a wholesome lifestyle. And, as always, practicality cannot be overlooked. In busy households or during times when quick meals are needed, sweet dishes like Milchreis provide an easy solution that satisfies hunger without requiring extensive preparation or cooking time. The ability to prepare large batches that can be stored and reheated later adds to their appeal. So while Milchreis and similar dishes may appear to belong solely in the realm of desserts, they serve as versatile main courses in German cuisine due to their traditional value, practicality and emotional connections.
And that brings us to an end of the episode of Plus 49. A heartfelt thank you to our guest Fernanda Suarez for sharing her incredible story, and to Marlene Baja, our producer, and as well to our listeners for joining in us. Whatever you are on your journey, remember, we're here to inspire, connect, and celebrate the richness of living between cultures. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and follow us for more stories and insights. Until next time.